Hello and welcome to Think Rant. I'm John Stabler.
I'm Steve Brett.
Steve, how's the diet going?
The diet, John, is going very, very well.
Really? Are you going to tell people how well the diet's going?
Yeah, I have lost a stone in 2 weeks, or just over a stone, in actual fact.
Wow.
So I've celebrated that by pigging out today.
Yes, we've just enjoyed some very fatty barbecue food.
Was all wholesomely grilled, John.
It was all grilled. No frying stuff around here. Yes, this week's been jam-packed full of more nonsense. I mean, if it wasn't, we wouldn't bother, would we? We'd probably just, I don't know, kick back and have some beer instead, I guess.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. You can leave comments on Stabler.tv. That's the blog, the Think Rant blog. It's been a bit quiet of late, as usual. Everyone seems to want to tell us what they think on Facebook, but no one can seem to be bothered to go to the blog. So I would appreciate it, please. It's not much fun logging on every day only to clear out spam. I'd rather be clearing out other people telling me how much of a prat I am or something like that. And also, you can contact us on Twitter.
At Think Rant.
Yep, that's no slash. I know there's a slash in Think Rant usually, but Twitter don't allow that, so just Think Rant. This week, I'm going to go first.
Okay, cool.
Because I wanted to talk about this last week. But we didn't get round to it because, it was quite good. It was quite good last week. We had enough stuff, so I thought this can keep and we can do it a bit more justice. This is a story from the BBC News website. It was covered quite widely in the media anyway. But this kind of just sort of brought it all together in one place. And that was the quarter of university hopefuls remain unplaced.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're all aware of the clearing process in universities. I mean, that is where people who didn't get enough points from their A levels or whatever it is that they do these days to secure a place.
Well, that's the last gasp attempt to get into uni, isn't it?
Yeah. So you kind of enter a queue for other universities, or I mean, if you or the university of your choice, you might get lucky. But you enter a queue, and you hopefully, that you'll get onto a course somewhere. How did you do, Steve? May I ask, did you get all of your required results and get onto your degree course of
I did.
choice?
I went to my first choice.
There you go. That's good. Unfortunately, sign of the times, places universities very competitive because of a lot of cuts in education. We got a case where there's a lot of people with some very good results as well.
Yes. But I think just aside, there's another issue there with the lack of numbers at university. I think one of the side issues there, really, to be honest with you, is we're sending I think we're probably sending too many young people to university. I don't think we're giving them enough viable options other than university, so that they see the only option they have is to go to university. Now I believe everyone has the right to further education, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's right for everyone to go to further education.
Yeah, I mean, not everyone's academic. I understand that.
And that's the problem, is that we're sending people who aren't that academic to university,
Yeah.
because we're saying that's the way to do it, is you do your A levels or equivalent, and then you go to university, you get a degree, and then you get a graduate job, and you're instantly on 26 grand a year. Happy days, away you go.
That's the
But
dream. Yeah.
that's the dream, but it's a false dream because I was a graduate. I left university, and I started work. Down on around about 11 grand, and I still haven't reached the 26 grand mark. So that was many years ago.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, this is a
I think that's
problem.
another issue as well, to be honest with you. Maybe that's another issue as a separate topic, but
No, I mean, why not now? I mean, I agree with you. The Labour gov the last government, the Labour
yeah.
government had a target of at least 50% of people going to university.
Which I've always said I think is wrong.
Yeah, I think they're getting it ass backwards in a way. What they should be saying is 100% of people that want to go to university
Absolutely.
should be able to go, But there should be opportunities for other people, and that was neglected, I
Exactly,
feel.
And if you don't want to go to university, these are the options that you have. Because, you know, something which we're missing out on very much now in this country is a decent apprenticeship scheme.
Correct.
For people to learn trades. And, you know, tradespeople are always going to be needed. You know, we can't not have our painters, our decorators, our builders, our brickies, our chippies, our plumbers, our locksmiths, etc., you know. There's always going to be a call for those people doing those jobs. More practical application of sciences, you know, instead of going off to actually study a degree in science, maybe they'll go and work for a chemical company. You know, there's just plenty of options, I think, which should be being explored rather than saying to kids, the way you've got to go is university. Because, you know, I think a lot of them this year have now realised, actually, it's not the necessarily, you know, as easy as they thought it would be.
And then they end up dropping out.
To follow, exactly. But then obviously, you know, with the lack of places now this year, then they're obviously questioning again what they're actually doing. It's, you know.
There's also what they call the A-star effect.
Sure.
Now, I don't particularly want to go in depth on this, but there's been this long-running argument, are exams getting easier or are people getting more intelligent? Okay.
Yeah. Now, or are teaching standards getting better?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So, you know, I think that's a separate debate, and maybe we might get around to that one day. But I personally think, no matter what, which one of those it is, or combination thereof, exams still need to be to show, you know, universities or employers or whatever, you know, how this person measures on the scale.
Sure.
If everyone has A stars, how are you meant to differentiate between, you know, some real talented people and people, yeah. You know, I don't want to take it away from them. You know, if they've worked hard, then sure, they deserve a good grade. But if we can't distinguish between people that are just okay and people that are brilliant, then what is the purpose of the exam in the first place?
I agree with you entirely. You know, the results would suggest that exams are getting easier. I think it's a way they're being delivered, and I'm not blaming the teaching, but I'm blaming the system which they have to adhere to. But it's making things easier for students.
Right. Well, I mean, because the reason why I said, you know, I didn't want to go into it is because I haven't really researched it. But you believe it's because the exams are easier, not because maybe teaching standards have improved?
I think there's a combination of factors. I think undoubtedly teaching standards have improved. But I think the way children are taught has changed. And I may be wrong on this, and, you know, I'm happy for anyone to comment otherwise, you know, through the website or on Twitter, whichever. But I think that the way kids are being taught, they're being spoon-fed a lot more rather than actually having to go and think and find out the answers themselves.
Yeah.
You know, if that's not the case, please tell me. But at least that seems to be the way it is to me, is that, you know, teachers, there's a lot more hand-holding going on than there ever was before.
Yeah, so taught to pass the exam rather than taught the subject.
Kind Precisely.
Of. Right, okay. Yeah, as I said,
so it's become a tick box exercise, really, rather than a test of ability.
Yeah, and I've seen that in professional qualifications as well. I have seen, I work in IT, and there are professional qualifications to go with that, yeah. Which I have achieved, but it does seem that the agreed method seems to be teaching people to pass rather than teaching them the fundamental aspects of whatever the subject is.
Yeah.
And I think the only thing that can suffer is going to be innovation and, you know, the future of our country, you know, as far as things like technology and science go, mm-hmm. You know, that's going to suffer. Simply because...
But like I said, I also think we're seeing it now with the results, because I think what we're seeing is now is that, as you said, kids are taught how to pass the exam, and they're taking that on board. And this is why one of the reasons why we're seeing this great performance in the exams year on year, because kids are being taught how to pass the exam rather than how to actually go out and, and learn around the subject.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just the plight of these youngsters now.
Well, yeah, absolutely. This is what I mean. You know, they've had this... I'm trying to think of the term now. Would be golden goose flashed before them of going to university, getting a great job out of university, and, you know, living a great lifestyle following. But now they can't get into university because the places have been cut. But where else are they going to go? You know, what else are these kids going to be doing now over the next year or whatever until they can potentially reapply to university again?
Yeah. No, definitely. And I think I saw the problem, coming quite early, because when I was doing A-levels, in my last year of A-levels, you know, the UCAS forms, as they were called then, I don't know what it's called now, they came out and everyone had one and everyone was expected to fill one in. And I just thought that maybe, I don't know, I mean, I was doing A-levels, so maybe you're meant to have made the decision to go to university before A-levels.
Yep.
As in, if you're doing A-levels, it's because you want
it's
an academic.
It's a means to end.
But I think it's just too young to make your mind up.
I totally agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, we're expecting our children to make decisions about the next 40, 50 years of their life when they're 30, because it starts when you pick your GCSEs. You know, we're expecting a 13-year-old to know where they want to be, really, in 30 years' time. And that's just not practical.
No. You know, unless we're just all happy for them to become firemen, train drivers and astronauts.
Yeah.
Or, Premiership footballers is the new one as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know what... I'll be honest, I don't know what the answer is to that. But, I mean, I think that's a problem as well, is that, you know, we're expecting to know... our children to know what they want to do.
Well, first of all, I just think it'd be a good idea if we had options, apart from university, for that higher level of education. You know, as you said, the apprenticeships, vocational qualifications, things like that. But also, how about not stigmatising people that can't make their mind up? You know, instead of painting them as this kind of wishy-washy, don't know what they want to do, I think it's perfectly reasonable to not what you want to do.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, luckily, I was always into IT, and I love it. I still do now. But I can imagine people...
Geek.
Yeah, I am. We agree on that one, so...
Yeah, we do agree. I just think that the government... Well, successive governments have let generations down because, you know, these people have been thinking, yes, it's going to be a breeze, we'll get into university. But something else, actually, which just I've just remembered, which I find a little bit strange, and I don't know if you know the answer to it, and again, you know, if anyone wants to chip in with an answer, feel free to do so. Universities get fined if they recruit over what they're telling the government they're going to recruit for.
Why would that?
I don't know. I don't understand it. I thought you might know, because that seems a strange one to me, because obviously, you know, we're saying there's a lack of places, but if universities could cope with more students, why can't they take them on? But they do. They get fined if they take over what they've said they're going to take.
Is it?
I think it's to do with funding.
Yeah, I think what it is that, you know, they apply for funding, they're awarded funding for, say, 200 people. And if they squeeze in another 10 or 15 or 50, maybe the government's assuming that the overall quality will suffer as a direct result of that. And so, therefore, they want to prevent that from happening, perhaps?
I don't know. I honestly don't know what the reasons are. I was hoping you could throw some light on it. Because it just seemed really bizarre to me that you know, university being penalised for being successful, really, I suppose.
Sure. Well, that's the only rational thing I can think of, really. But yeah, if anybody knows, let us know. Okay, do you have something interesting for me?
Well, just something which I just want to have just a little rant about, actually, and it's something which we touched on very briefly a short while ago, when it was announced that it was due to be released. And that's Tony Blair's autobiography.
Right, yes.
What's all the hoo-ha about? What is the fuss all about? You know, we just spent the last 14 years, or however long it was. It was longer than that, wasn't it? It was three terms of office, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it was, what, 15 or 16 years, something like that, of his government. Why do I need to have his book to understand, you know, to get his perspective on it? Because, to be honest with you, it's going to be filled with more lies.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I can, you know, see, it's Tony Blair's attempt to maybe justify his position, you know, justify his reasoning behind, you know, Iraq. I mean, he was Prime Minister for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure that there's other interesting things that he's going to talk about, but I just ultimately think it is a justification of his decision to go into Iraq. And maybe an apology, or...
Well, no, because he's completely unrepentant about the war on terror. Absolutely 100% unrepentant. He says, you know, he'd make the same decision now. And he's sort of, you know, been quite clear to point out that actually he doesn't think that what he did was wrong. He says he believes Saddam Hussein needed to be toppled, you know, needed to invade Iraq. And he stands by that. And obviously, you know, he was saying how, obviously how tragic it is that people do die in the conflict, and he felt great sympathy for those families, but, you know, he felt that he had made the right decision by going to war.
Yeah, I mean, you see this quite often. You see people that, you know, who've had, they've got the benefit of hindsight and experience and, you know, knowing what happened. And yet, they just find it quite hard to perhaps admit that they weren't, you know, they weren't right after all. You know, they can't admit they're wrong. They'd rather, you know, perform these, I don't know, what, somersaults of logic and
yeah,
just to justify, you know, their position.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, that's exactly what Tony Blair's doing. I think that's what he'll continue to do.
I mean, for instance, this whole, like, the weapons of mass destruction business.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't really heard him come out and say, perhaps, you know, I had this, you know, I got it wrong because I was basing it on this evidence, which turned out to be incorrect. But he didn't say, I haven't heard him say that.
No, and he won't. He's, you know, as far as he's concerned, he's done nothing wrong. You know, Iraq did have weapons of mass destruction, which was proven not to be the case.
Yeah. I mean, I would be interested in probably the thing is, half of me would be interested in reading his book. The other half thinks, why would you want to put yourself through that? Because I am interested to see, you know, his exact reasons for going to war. If it was solely the weapons of mass destruction, then he got it ultimately wrong. But if he has some other kind of argument, then, you know, I am willing to listen.
Yeah. Nothing to do with, you know, the billions of dollars worth of oil under Iraq at all, obviously.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever going to mention that one.
Well, no, of course he's not, but he's never going to back down either. He's never going to say, I was wrong, and he has said as much. You know, he absolutely fundamentally believes he was right.
Or unless, you know, unless he was, you know, trying to hold to a higher ideal. Like, you know, he did believe he was going to be helping overall the Iraqi people. You know, he did believe that there was this dictatorship that they needed
to
be free from.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know...
But that's why one of the fewest... I hardly ever hear that, you know. I'd be more interested in hearing about that than this smoke and mirrors of weapons of mass destruction.
WMDs.
Yeah. And this fear-mongering that was going on at the time. You know, but as I said, maybe it does get mentioned. I need to read the book, so you know, so I can pass judgment, of course.
Yeah, maybe I'll just take it out from the library.
Maybe it comes on. Maybe he'll do an audio book. You know, you can listen to it on the, you know, on the way to work.
Well, as long as he's not reading it. It reminds me of those days with Gerry Adams on the BBC on British media, when his voice was censored. So he would have the video of him speaking, but it'd be an actor
playing him, yeah,
overlaying the voice. And I just, you know, wonder if that's what they're gonna have to do for Tony the Tories.
Maybe they could get somebody less grating than Tony Blair to read it. I know someone like, say, Anne Widdecombe.
Quite possibly.
So yeah, I don't know. Part of me wants to read the book to see if he's got anything intelligent to say. But then again, he didn't seem to have anything intelligent to say while he's Prime Minister.
No, exactly.
I mean, I was never a new Labour
fan. It was a great disappointment for me. I'll make no bones about it. I was very much a believer in New Labour and supported them wholeheartedly. I mean, you know, I campaigned on their behalf and did a lot of work with them in the early days. However, certainly, you know, towards the end of the Blair government, I was starting to become a bit more disillusioned with them, to be honest with you, because I didn't like the fact that Tony Blair decided to take me for an idiot, mainly, you know, over these issues of war. You know, I could have, I wouldn't necessarily say it was right, but I could have accepted it if he'd have come out and said, actually, yeah, we're going there for the oil, and we thought, you know, we'd topple Saddam at the same time, because actually, he's a nutter, so, you know, let's get him out of the picture. Rather than this whole nonsense of WMDs and, you know, making the Middle East more secure and all this, because, you know, in effect, what has it actually done?
Yeah, so just going back to the reasons to go, you know, into Iraq. And I was talking about how, you know, maybe saving these people from the dictator, you know, might have been a justified reason. Just your take on that a second, because at the end of the day, you know, if you see crimes against humanity going on in a country somewhere, is there a way we can kind of define when it's okay to intervene?
Exactly, and you know, I think if we went into Iraq to remove a despot, a dictator, you know, call him what you will, why didn't we go into a country like Turkmenistan or even Burma? You know, we've got a military junta ruling the people. You know, make no doubt about it, Saddam Hussein was not a nice man. He was a bad man, and I'm sure that Iraq is a better country for him having been removed. But don't play me for the fool by saying that was the reason why you've gone into that country. Because you haven't done it in any other country where a dictator is ruling.
Sure, but I mean, at best you could say, well, you got to start somewhere, I guess. I mean, how did Saddam fit on the dictator scale at the time?
Well, you know, I think he was pretty high up there, to be honest with you. But I think, you know, the military junta in Burma are much the same. I mean, I can't pronounce her name, so I'm not going to try to. But the lady who was democratically elected by the Burmese people to represent them and, you know, to be their prime minister or president, whichever it is, you know, has been under house arrest for something like 14 years or more.
Mm.
Because the military junta refused to step down out of power. You know, it's a very poor country. People's rights are still being abused. Human rights are being abused left, right and centre. But, you know, that's been going on for many, many years and we still haven't budged.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that a lot of these dictators were actually put there by countries such as the US and the UK.
By the CIA.
yeah, basically, because they, you know, they would toe the party line more than whoever was there before.
Yeah.
They'd get in. All of a sudden, they say, now I'm in charge. Hey, get lost. Whip
Which
up the
exactly
anti-Western
what happened in Afghanistan.
Yeah. So, but I was just looking at it from the point of view as, you know, you see something going on. You know, do we have a responsibility to step in?
I would like to say yes, because I think if there's blatant breaches of human rights going on, then somebody needs to step in. But like you say, it's when do you decide enough is enough and, you know, actually do something about it.
Yeah, because I mean, human rights is something that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Because we live in what we consider a relatively free society. But there's a lot of countries out there that, you know, they don't perhaps, well, they don't have freedom same as us anyway. And a lot of people would argue, well, you know, they've been like that for so long, maybe they don't know any better, or, you know, so who
but
are we to go and...
won't know any better until they're shown a better way.
Sure. But they'd argue, you know, who are we to go over there imposing our, you know, what we think are human rights.
But this goes back to the argument we were having last week, and now we're kind of coming from different sides, aren't we?
Right.
Because you're saying, who are we to say who's right or who's wrong, but actually what we're saying is that by inaction we're causing suffering to people who are in a very bad way. So, you know, actually maybe, yes, we should be doing something more proactive about it.
Yeah, I mean, when I said, who are we, I was obviously just playing devil's advocate.
Yeah,
there.
No, absolutely.
Because I obviously, I mean, yeah. You know, I have my view on it. But, you know, it does... The problem with going to war, you know, if all the war was going in, removing a dictator and making everybody happy, then I think we should just choose to, you know, help as many people as possible and, you know, get rid of all the dictators. But unfortunately, it's never that straightforward.
No. No, and as we've seen with Iraq, you know, troops are coming home now finally, but they've been in there for years, you know, ever since that fateful day George Bush stood on the decks of his aircraft carrier and said the war's over, you know, about 3 weeks after, you know, the war had started, and here we are, how many years on, and it's still rumbling on.
Oh, is it me again now, is it?
Yeah.
I tell you what I want to talk about then. I wanted to talk about the story that was out today, and you obviously picked up on it as well, because you mentioned it to me, was Stephen Hawking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's come out and he's made a statement.
Yep.
Believing that God is not necessary for the creation of the universe, or everything, as you may want to phrase it. What's your take on this, Steve? You know, I'm interested in your opinion.
Crikey, well, I personally would disagree with that statement, probably for a different reason than what you might disagree with it. Purely, you know, because as a Christian, and I would say that God did create the universe. Even if the universe did happen through the Big Bang, then I would say, yeah, God was there at the start, but I think, you know, it is intelligent design. So I do disagree with Stephen Hawking on that, but I understand that he's changed his position from what he actually wrote then in A Brief History of Time, where he said that actually it was likely that there had to be some kind of God divine being who sparked off the Big Bang.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I haven't, as I said, I haven't read Brief History of Time for a long time, and I remembered reference to God in there. But, you know, as far as I was aware, I thought it was metaphorical. But, you know, just going back to what you said, you know, about, like, you know, the intelligent design, I just wanted to explore that a little bit more.
Okay.
Because obviously, according to you, you know, you said that he said, you know, there was this intelligence or there was a cause,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I was just, you know, I mean, did you agree with that original thing? I mean, do you have any other thoughts on it?
No, I mean, I would agree with that because, I mean, from my point of view, the universe is a huge, massive, wonderful place, mm-hmm. And I don't see how, and again, you know, personal opinion, but I don't see how that could possibly have been a mere coincidence. You know, I do think there was a hand there in the background shaping and designing that universe. You know, I'm not necessarily talking about a Genesis view of creation.
No, sure, but like the original.
Yeah, the original Big Bang being sparked off by God.
And is that, I don't know, I mean, is there any... any logical thinking behind that? Can you like say this is why you think it?
Well, as I said, I think the universe is too varied and too wonderful a place for it to have just been coming into existence as a coincidence. That's my logic for it. You know, you look around and you see the wonder of the universe, and you know facts like had the Earth been 1 degree hotter. Or 1 degree colder, life wouldn't have existed on there. So, you know, it's things like that. You know, we're talking about 1 degree, such a small amount, and it just seems to me that random chance actually wouldn't fit.
I don't want to put words in your mouth or anything. So what you're saying is kind of like Everything is so finely, you know, tuned to make ultimately us that, you know, it's kind of hard to
Yeah,
believe otherwise.
I look at the universe and I find it difficult to say that there is no hand behind that shaping, developing that universe.
Right. 'Cause, you know, I kind of look at it the other way. Because I think if you were like, you know, say, you know, I don't want to go too specific, but you were powerful enough to, you know, be, you know, a god and create everything, don't you think creating an entire universe is like, why do you need to do that? Because if anything, the universe is designed to make like stars and black holes more than, because ultimately there won't be us, will there? Because everything disintegrates into nothing. And most of the universe seems to agree with that. It's only just this tiny place that doesn't agree with that. So I'm just wondering how you got from this tiny, you know, odd part of the universe and seen.
Well, yeah, I mean that's kind of part of it, isn't it? Is, you know, that tiny odd part of the universe. You know, what an amazing coincidence that all the factors were absolutely right for life to be formed, for there to be, you know,
But
races
say,
on the planet of this sort of thought.
but if there's like only one sun and one planet and we were on it, fair enough.
It might not be the most efficient way to create a universe, John. You know, there may be a
But
few
that's what I mean,
spare
it's
parts.
don't you think it's like kind of like overkill that you need to create this whole massive thing which has all these which is geared, if anything, to be hostile to life? Because apart if we're not on this planet, well, we can't even live on the whole of this planet. We can only live on certain areas of it. Most of the universe is completely inhospitable to us. So, I don't know. I'd say the universe is designed badly, really, for life.
Yeah, badly for life, but we've got life. We've got all the necessary ingredients to support life on this planet.
But that's kind of like.
How many planets are there? Do you know what I mean?
Well.
I know, obviously, not all of them have been visited, and we don't know, and maybe there are other planets out there which are suitable to support life.
So, do you think if we discovered, say, another planet with life on it, would you think that would back up what you're saying, or do you think it would be that would kind of ruin your argument, really?
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
Because if you're saying it's fine-tuned for us.
Well, Earth is fine-tuned for us, yeah, because you know, I don't know. Maybe as in, for example, War of the Worlds. You know, you've got an alien race which is nitrogen breathing as opposed to oxygen breathing.
Right.
You know, I don't know. It just everything just seems to be a happy coincidence for me. You know, that the situations were absolutely right for life to be created on Earth. And you know, if there's life on other planets, well, it'd be interesting to see what it is and how it is, you know.
But did you ever hear the story? It was who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Douglas Adams.
Douglas Adams. He had a great analogy, which was like a puddle. A sentient puddle.
Right.
He could think to himself, and he said to himself, he says, "This is just amazing. This hole I'm in is made just for me." So, you know, that's the idea. Is what I'm saying is, it seems that we've changed, or we have evolved to be compatible with the planet, rather than the planet's fine-tuned to us.
Yeah, but for life to exist on the planet, there had to be certain conditions in the first place.
Right. But that's
So,
what I mean. So
if
if those
those
can.
conditions weren't there, life wouldn't have been supported on the planet anyway.
Right, exactly. But I'm just asking, how do you get from there had to be a designer to that? Because that's a non sequitur. There's no.
Well, purely because if, well, like I said, for me, there are too many coincidences for it to have been a completely random, chaotic event.
But like, if you got like million billion, well, hang on, billions of galaxies, even more stars, how many planets? Surely, just you're gonna have at least one, aren't you? in the Goldilocks zone, as they call it. There's going to be one that's going to just let in blind chance get it.
I don't know. I don't know. I like I said, it's a personal opinion, and that's just what I feel about it. Is I just think, these conditions are absolutely right, and life is formed. We could have been like Mars. We could have been like Mercury. We're exactly the right distance away from the sun to be able to, not to be too cold on the Earth or not to be too dry.
Anyway, we kind of sidetracked because that is not what Hawking was talking about anyway.
No.
But he was just talking about like the before universe thing.
Yeah.
So,
Well, yeah,
but
isn't it? Because that's always been the argument, isn't it? If the Big Bang Theory is saying the universe was created out of nothing.
Actually, sorry, I got to stop you there. That's not what the Big Bang Theory says.
Well, what does it say?
The Big Bang Theory describes, sorry, it gives a theory, an explanation for the current state of the universe. So all it's saying basically is that at one point there was everything together and
Yeah.
there was an explosion to push it out. However, it does not actually say that everything came from nothing.
Well, no, okay, there's no simplification, but you've got something which, is a tiny small amount of whatever, sat in whatever, suddenly it's exploded and expanded, the universe is formed. So, what was there before?
I don't know.
Exactly. And that's the point. We don't know, do we? We've got no way of knowing, we never will know. We can look at the radar images which we've seen from the Hubble Space Telescope and say, yeah, the Earth is actually the Earth, the universe is expanding, contracting, and it shows signs of a blast, sort of, an event horizon somewhere which has created this, but we don't know what was there beforehand. And that was what I guess Hawking was saying originally, was that chain of events which led to the creation of this universe was potentially sparked off by some kind of divine being. And now he's saying, actually, that's not necessary. Because chaos theory says that actually it could just be a completely random event.
Yeah, and I kind of thought he overstepped the mark, because as far as I'm concerned, and all current thinking, because he has to go with science as we know it, he can't just make shit up.
No.
So, but at the moment they say, right, the Big Bang happened, and then there's a certain amount of time where we're not sure about what happened, but after that we've got this great model, and we think we know what happened. And he claimed that just on, like gravity alone could do all this. I think it's just this wild speculation. And although there's a place for it.
At the end of the day, the man's a scientist, so I'm sure he's got workings out somewhere, which explains
Oh, again, yeah, I mean, I'll definitely want to read
is
the
his
book.
theorem.
We've only got to go on by what's been said in the paper. But I just found that, sometimes people can overstep the mark, and it's like when Nietzsche said God is dead. People make these sweeping statements, but you gotta back up what you're saying, haven't you?
Yeah.
Otherwise you're just making stuff up.
Just making a statement.
Yeah, sure.
Like, I invented the banana.
Yeah, but the banana was kind of invented by somebody, because.
Yeah, but I invented
You may have, because you're older than me, and
it.
so like you might have been around before I was born, and you
But
might.
no, but my point is that's just a statement which I've just made up. I've got nothing to
No,
back that up.
exactly. So and so, I'm not. I mean, at least, all right. Hawking's trying to, maybe he's trying to base it on science that we know of, but I just think this whole thing of what happened before everything, before space and time.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we're part of space and time.
Exactly, which is my point, what I was saying. We can't see what was there before the Big Bang.
Yeah. Well,
We can
I.
only see things which have followed from.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say that we'll never
Well,
know.
at the moment, yeah.
Yeah. At the moment, though, it just seems that we don't have a Scooby-Doo. So, yeah. I'll read his book.
You can tell me what it says then.
Yeah. I'll translate it for
You give
you.
me a quick precis.
Yeah. No. I'll get the crayons out for you.
Nice. Yeah. Quite simple pictures as well. Stick men.
Yeah, I'll just be like, This one's you.
this big circle here, this is the world.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And a big beardy man in the sky. He made it. Have you got a story for me, dude?
Well, the only thing which I can think of at the moment, which I want to go back to, really, is our old friend the media. Because this week I never thought I'd ever find myself saying this, but I've actually felt really sorry for William Hague.
Wow.
The story is that he shared a room, a twin room no less, with one of his male aides, which has obviously then led to questions about his sexuality, the state of his relationship with his wife, the fact that they've got no kids, and basically he's had to put up with a lot of innuendo about his sexuality over the last couple of days.
I mean, that's quite shocking, because considering that people have been asking, MPs to save money and not, put in ridiculous expenses.
Well, absolutely. That's my point. I mean, this is the media have jumped on this, and, instantly bringing out that he must be gay because he's shared a twin room, not a double room, a twin room with a male aide. I just think this is ridiculous. I don't see it as being newsworthy, to be honest with you. And I think it's a terrible intrusion upon William Hague's life, and also on the aide.
Yeah, he's had to resign now.
He's had to resign as a result of this.
And I think this is quite telling of some of the press, okay? Considering that they seem to... Well, it's obvious that they just pay lip service to equality and how, we should be accepting of everybody, when they think that being gay is a scandal.
Well, what is the issue, okay? The guy is happily married. What is the issue with him sharing a room with a bloke?
No. But what I mean is...
sexuality, we don't even know. This guy may... I haven't looked into that much detail, but this guy may be gay, he may be straight.
But why should somebody's sexuality be news? That is my point.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I totally agree with that. That's what I'm saying. I don't see why there should be some kind of outrage or scandal over over this at all. I think as far as I can say, it's not news. I'm looking here now on the BBC News website as I'm speaking to you, and I think a Tory peer, Lord Tebbit, has said that he's been naive at best, foolish at worst. But why? I don't see what William Hague has done.
You mean, sorry, he's been naive and foolish for sharing the room with him? Is that
what
he's saying? I guess
that's what the context is, because it doesn't really give it around on the story, but I'm guessing that's what it is. But I don't see what William Hague has done wrong at the end of the day. I've gone on holiday, I've shared a room with blokes, and, I'm not gay. It doesn't make me gay because I've shared a room with them.
I got no problem saying it. I've stayed in a bed with a bloke before, as in shared. We had to bunk in.
Yeah.
And I'm going, what? Seriously. But as I said, I just think it's very telling of the press who are just paying lip service to acceptance.
Yeah, and the fact then, which I think takes it to an even worse level, is the fact that to try and justify himself, William Hague has had to come out and talk about some very private and distressing matters that have affected him and his wife. In the case of the reason why they haven't had any children is because, unfortunately, they've suffered many miscarriages.
Yeah. So now he's got to, justify himself to the press.
And why should he? I think it's absolutely disgraceful. I feel... absolutely, terrible for the guy. I think, just leave him alone, back off. It's a non-story, it's a non-starter. I guess maybe if he'd been caught in bed with a man, or, an orange stuck in his mouth or whatever, and a pair of pants on his head.
In bed, in a man,
Yeah, exactly. Then maybe that is a different story, because then we're talking about infidelity then within his marriage. But that's not the case. That's not what's happened here. That's not what the story is. The story literally is a man has shared a room with another man.
Yeah, and I find this, you know, back in the 70s, it seemed normal, you know. I mean, look at Bert and Ernie. You know, no, yeah. That was all cool.
Yeah.
And Morecambe and Wise.
Yeah.
So, you know, Wise, it's kind of almost like the paedophile frenzy. Because
yeah,
now,
absolutely.
You know, two men sharing a bed, something's got to be going on. Just like, you know, man with a camera taking pictures of children, must be something going on.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's that kind of thinking.
Oh, yeah, it just winds me up. It really does. You know, I've not always been a big fan of William Hague, you know, but I just genuinely feel sorry for the guy, to be honest with you. I think, you know, it's a disgrace.
Yeah, and, you know, as I said, someone's lost their job, you know, had to resign. I mean, I'm hoping he'll fall on his feet. Maybe he'll, you know, get a job with another minister or something.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was my rant there.
I got a science-y story.
Okay, shoot.
This is just interesting to me. Well, I'm sure it'll be interesting to other people as well. Orca, wait, you know, orcas, killer whales?
Also known as killer whales, yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, they seem to be evolving into two separate species.
Okay.
Now, this is quite interesting, because obviously, we're always looking for, you know,
signs of evolution continuing.
Yeah. We're looking, you know, we got the theory, and we're looking for any evidence to, you know, hopefully we're looking for evidence to prove it wrong as well. But, you know, it just, you know, the case gets stronger day by day and all that. But I just think it's interesting because we've seen, like, evolution of new features in the lab because mm-hmm. they've taken things like bacteria. And then the bacteria have evolved new powers or new abilities.
Yeah.
Like, one of them is very interesting. There's a chemical plant that was making nylon. And the nylon was coming out of a waste pipe. And they found a new bacteria there that was able to consume nylon. So a bacteria had learned how to consume nylon. Yeah. Awesome. Other bacteria have learned how to consume foods in petri dishes. So, you know, they've seen it in the lab. But to see such a large, complex animal, such as a killer whale, you know,
evolution in action.
Evolution in action, because everybody's always complaining that because it happens on such a long time scale,
mm-hmm.
you know, is it happening or is it not? I just think it's interesting to see something happening within our own lifetime, which could lead to two separate species, depending on how you define species. A species,
yeah, sure.
I define it as can only mate with itself. So eventually you'll have these two killer whales species that can no longer mate. Therefore, that, so that's the definition. I just thought it was interesting because it's, you know, it's different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. This is one of my favourite subjects. Alcohol.
Yep.
Apparently, Scottish MPs have decided that people of Scotland are drinking too much alcohol. Now, I don't know where they got that idea from.
No, I couldn't possibly think.
So what they've decided to do is to kind of slap a tax on alcohol. So it's kind of like 45p minimum. So you're basically paying 45p tax.
It's 45p per unit, isn't it?
Yeah, per unit, sorry, yeah. Just to... So what do you think of this? What's your instant reaction?
My instant reaction would be that it's another case of the nanny state stepping in, telling us how we should live our lives.
Right.
You
don't think they have any, you know, good reason to, or?
Well, look, you know, we know there's clear health benefits for not drinking too much, and I guess, you know, if there is a problem, then it probably is a drain on the National Health Service in Scotland. But I already get taxed quite a bit on my alcohol. Should I be paying anything more? Well, no, I don't think I should, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, the amount of tax on alcohol does pay for any healthcare. You know, just like the amount of tax smokers pay, I mean, it does pay, I think, more than the burden.
Yeah.
And you know, I think it's the same with alcohol. So I think they're just trying to stop people from drinking. That's the basic. They all cut down at least.
Well, look, yeah, I mean that probably is part of it, but also, you know, every year we hear how they're going to put up tax on smoking to try and stop people from smoking, and they're going to put a tax up on petrol to stop people driving their car. But at the end of the day, what they're doing is just a revenue increasing exercise, because people aren't going to stop using their car, people aren't going to stop smoking, and people aren't going to stop drinking.
Right, and that's the yeah, and that's what I wanted to. That was my point. I wanted to get on to was that it's a tax on the poor, in effect. Again, it's another stealth tax in a way, because as you said, people, it might stop them drinking quite as much, but it's not going to stop people from drinking.
No, exactly. Just means you have to pay more for it.
Yeah, so the people that are going to feel the pinch are the people that don't have a lot of disposable income,
Yep.
and that's the poor people again. You know, as I said, I'm not a lefty or anything. You know, I can, you know, it doesn't make a lot of difference to me. I mean, I can afford it.
Yeah.
You can afford it. But, you know, why can't poor people, or, you know, people that don't earn as much as us, go down the pub and make themselves feel a bit better with a few pints, you know?
Well, yeah, you know, it's about social interaction that as well, isn't it? You know, it's I can't say that I necessarily agree with the Scottish Parliament's stance on that one, to be honest with
No. And it's 45p is quite excessive.
you. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's not like the cider tax that they were thinking of or whatever in the election.
Yeah.
I got another one. MP criticised after attack on sex education. A Conservative MP has been involved in a row after appearing to blame the rise in sexually transmitted infections on greater sex education.
Okay, it's a bit of an oxymoron, surely.
Yeah, he is. He's Stuart Jackson. He is an idiot. I think I can say that. It's not just my opinion. I think that's a
That's
fact. It's a
fact.
fact.
Well, you know, I think that's been one of the mantras of, you know, the Conservative, not the Conservative Party, but of Conservative people for some time, is that, you know, sex education is bad because it's encouraging kids to have sex before they're ready for it. Now, if I remember my sex education classes when I was in school, I didn't immediately feel the need after those classes to go out and find some girl to have sex with straight away, to be honest with you.
Really? How old were you? Just out of
Well, I had
curiosity.
sex education, I suppose, in primary school.
Yeah, I did as well. I think it was in like the last year.
Last year of primary school, yeah.
So I think by I mean you.
Which I think is about right, going up into comprehensive school. I think, you know, that's.
You don't have the urge yet, I don't think,
No.
but you know,
But
but that's the
puberty,
time.
but the point is puberty is coming by that point.
Yeah.
You know, people, or you know, as they go through puberty, start to become sexually aware. So I think it's important to have knowledge at those times. Knowledge is never a bad thing, you know. I think it's time to have knowledge at that point to, you know, help you understand what's going on with your body
Yeah.
at that point. So no, I totally disagree with what you're saying. I mean, if anything, sex education lessons don't say, all right, you go out there, have sex with some ropey bird, don't worry, don't use a condom because you don't need to use it. What the sex education classes, as I remember, would say is, well, look, if you are going to go out and have sex, make sure you use a condom, because if you don't, you may be subject to sexually transmitted diseases or an unwanted pregnancy.
Yeah, that's how I remember it. And you know, sex education just wasn't about sex. It was about, as you said, preparing for puberty, the changes your body you're going to go through, things like that. But yeah, I mean, this conservative attitude or Victorian values, as I like to think of it, they seem to think that it is possible to stop teenagers from having sex. They actually think this is achievable. They think that, oh, you know, we'll just break this natural tendency for young, hormone-filled people to go and have sex with each other. They think they can stop that by just putting a ring on. Put your chastity ring on. You know, is that, no, it's not called a chastity ring, is it? It's
No,
called a.
but that's essentially what it is, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you're not going to have sex. You know, you've got to meet the right person and all that. I mean, not even funny, but for most people, the first time they have sex, it's just completely disappointing anyway. So you don't want it to be with the right person. You want it to be with the wrong person. And he's blaming liberals, because liberals are for sex education. He's not, because there's been an increase in STIs,
The increase in STIs has come about because maybe actually sex education isn't direct enough, possibly. I don't know. Maybe that's what the issue is. It's not that they're having sex education, it's just that the sex education isn't effective enough. Because, maybe people are more promiscuous now than what they were 20, 30 years ago. That's quite possible.
But surely there's more factors than just sex education.
No, absolutely. But maybe that's what he's alluding to, is the fact that actually sex education maybe isn't explicit enough in the dangers of STIs and in the value of protection. I don't know, but
But the other thing, of course, is he's made this statement on the back of results that said that there was a 3% rise in the year on the year before. Now, 3%, if you take that into account of just,
what was the population increase?
well, exactly, population increase plus just variance, statistical variance that's acceptable, that's nothing. 3% is, what if it had been 20%, I think that's that,
Start
there
asking
would be
questions.
something. You could say there's like this causal factor that we need to investigate.
Yeah.
But 3%, I mean, well, also, so next year, okay, because nothing's going to change. We're not going to withdraw sex education based on this guy. So
No.
next year, if it went down, what's he going to say then?
Well, yeah, precisely.
So I think he should just be quiet for a bit,
Yeah,
unless he's got some
shush
ideas apart from everyone stop having sex.
now.
Maybe he should shut up, I think, really. But he played he because everybody took him to task over it and gave him a hard time. He played the persecution card with it all,
Right.
saying that all the liberals were out to get him. Well, I'm sorry,
If you say something stupid, expect to be brought up for it.
Yeah, as I said, reality has a liberal bias, and they just don't like it, So I'll wrap it up this week unless you got a story.
Nope, nothing more from me.
Well, it's been another fine week. And tune in next week to find out how much more weight Steve has lost. This is how desperate we're getting for ratings. Steve is going to, I don't know. What's your target weight?
To be honest with you, I haven't actually got a target weight. It's just lose as much as I can, as quickly as I can.
That'd be so cool though. Like, what you want to do is you want to take pictures of yourself, like in clothes, until it's like that scene out of Big at the end when he's walking down the street.
Yeah,
That would be so cool. The only thing is you need to lose some height as well. But, well, thanks for listening, people, and we'll see you next week.
nice one, cheers.
true. What you think that you see isn't real, isn't real. What you think that you know isn't true, isn't true. Isn't true, isn't true.